Shalom. Today, the 18th day of the month of Elul of the year 5776, corresponding to the 21st of September of the year 2016. And we now continue with our study of Mishnah, tractate Makot, the tractate which deals with the subject of the penalty of 39 lashes administered by the Bet Din. And as discussed already in our introduction to the tractate and our discussion of the first Mishnah of chapter 1, the entire tractate, although called Makot, referring to the lashes, the blows, does not speak about this subject throughout the tractate. In fact, we shall only come to address centrally the subject of Makot, who are the transgressors that would be afflicted with the penalty of Makot, the lashes. We should only come to that in chapter 3. We do come into this subject in chapter 1, because in chapter 1 we are in a continuation of the tractate of Sanhedrin, and the central issue in chapter 1 is that of testimony in a Bet Din, testimony in a rabbinical court, the testimony of a dim of witnesses. And the Torah for the decision about numerous matters which is going to be made by a court will rely upon testimony, aidut. The whole of the Torah, the whole of Israel, are all about testimony. When we recite Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel, Hashem our God, Hashem is one, we are aidim, we are witnesses. The third Hebrew letter of the word Shema, the ayin, is written large in the Torah scroll, larger than the other letters, and likewise the letter Dalet of Echad, and ayin and Dalet, both of those two letters are written and enlarged in the verse of Shema Yisrael. They spell out the Hebrew word Ed, a witness. At Sinai, all Israel were witnesses to God's revelation. And there are times when people are not certain about a particular fact, about a particular issue, and will rely upon the testimony of witnesses. Now, the Torah itself specifically states that in a rabbinical case before the Sanhedrin, the testimony is going to have to be given by two valid witnesses. And we shall be looking in more detail about the way that testimony works in a rabbinical court later in our chapter 1. And we find in Deuteronomy chapter 17 that if a person had been heard to be serving idols, the man or the woman would have to be taken out to the Sanhedrin. And the Torah says in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 6, according to the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall the dead person be executed. He shall not be put to death by the mouth of one witness. Here we have the basic Torah law that in all capital cases it is the testimony of two witnesses. If their testimony is not controverted and they were not proven to have been elsewhere at the time they claim to have witnessed the event, if all of this is the case, then it is the testimony of two witnesses that determines how the case will be judged. Now, there are instances where the testimony of one witness is sufficient. This is not addressed in our tractate. There are a variety of areas where the testimony of one witness can influence the case. A woman that had been in a faraway place with her husband, and she comes back and she says, well, her husband has died, and she wants authorization from the Bet Din to marry somebody else, the laws of testament in her case are greatly alleviated. She requires only one witness to testify that what she says is correct, to report that her husband has died, and she may be she will then be permitted to marry somebody else. Another case where the testimony of one witness is sufficient is where we need a determination if a particular item was or was not kosher. Let us say that there was something that looks like animal fat that could be of the permitted fats for consumption of the animal, or it could be of the particularly hard fats in certain parts of the body that in Hebrew are called chelev, the consumption of which by an Israelite is considered a transgression punishable by the heavenly penalty of karet, the excision of that soul. And if a person was witnessed to have eaten chelev fat, then two witnesses could bring them to Bet Din and have that person given the lashes to take off from them the heavenly penalty of karet. Well, now, two witnesses would have to witness the person eating the fat, but it would be sufficient if only one witness knew that this was the forbidden chelev fat, that his testimony alone on the halachic status of the fat itself would be sufficient to have the person get lashes if he had been witnessed eating this substance by two witnesses. In other words, we here again is a case where we rely upon the testimony of one witness. Where there was only one witness to a financial transaction, such as a loan, or some other financial matter, the testimony of one witness is not sufficient to swing the case against the person against whom he's witnessing, but it can require that other person to be required to take a solemn oath that the facts are as he says it was, as opposed to the way the witness is saying it was. So there are cases in the Bet Din where the testimony of one witness is sufficient. But in our chapter, we are concerned with the case of Edim Zomemim. The Hebrew word Zomem is a verb from the Hebrew word zima, which means counsel, some plan. Some could be, in our case, of the Edim Zomemim. These are treacherous people who are plotting against the person that they are going to give false testimony to the Bet Din. Now, the Torah itself has the general prohibition against giving false testimony, which is in the Ten Commandments. Loisane v'reacho eid sheker. You shall not answer against your fellow as a false witness. It's forbidden to give false testimony in the court against your fellow Israelite. And if a person does so, then in most cases, if the testimony was false, when the witness is exposed as a false witness, he will be subject to the penalty of lashes, the 39 lashes. Now, Edim Zomemim are false witnesses, but the law of the Edim Zomemim, of the false witnesses that we are talking about, is where they are trying to cause the person against whom they are testifying to suffer in some way as a result of their testimony. And the Torah tells us in the portion of the Edim Zomemim, this is contained in Deuteronomy chapter 19 from verses 15 on. The Torah tells us that there shall not stand up one single witness against a person for any transgression that he may transgress. Once again, the Torah tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 16, that according to the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall something endure. We shall be discussing later on what three witnesses may add to what two witnesses have to say. We should be discussing the various conditions in which three witnesses may have a voice. Essentially, any matter is determined by two valid witnesses. If you add witnesses, it may make the evidence look more impressive, but it does not halachically change the status of the evidence, except in certain respects in the way that the witnesses might be disproved. We shall come to that later on in our study of chapter 1 of Makot. But the Torah continues in Deuteronomy chapter 19, when a wicked witness rises up against a person to accuse him of something going astray, then the two disputants will be standing there before the judges, before the priests and the judges, and the judges must investigate the whole issue. And if they discover that the witness was a false witness, that he spoke falsely against his brother, the Torah says, you shall do to him as he plotted to do to his brother. Ka'asher zomam la'asos le'ochiv, as he plotted to do against his brother. So the law of the Ed Zomam is that there are cases where he suffers what he intended to bring upon his brother. And as we shall see in our Mishnah now in chapter 1 of Makot, the second Mishnah which we now come to, we shall see various ways in which this plays out. We had studied in the first Mishnah cases where you cannot do to the Eid Zomim what he wanted to do to his fellow. Just to recapitulate from the first Mishnah of Makot, when would the law of Eidim Zomimin be applied? If the false witnesses gave false testimony against a Kohen priest that he was not fit to be a priest because his mother had been divorced before she had him, or she'd undergone the levirate marriage. In those cases, you don't say, well, let's make the false witnesses into disqualified priests, because you can't do that, because even if they were priests in the first place, if you were, you may punish them, but as disqualified priests, all of their children and progeny are also disqualified, and that would not be commensurate with what they tried to do to the object of their plot, because they were only plotting against him, not against his seed. So you cannot punish the seed of the Edim Zomamin for something that was committed by their ancestors. And so in this case, said the first Mishnah, the Edim Zomamim, the false witnesses, would be have the penalty of lashes. Since you cannot apply what the Torah says about their having to have the same done to them as they wanted to do to the person they testified against, since you cannot do that, in this case, the standard punishment for false testimony of the Ten Commandments, do not give false testimony against your fellow, this is applied the penalty of the lashes. So now we come to in the second Mishnah of Makot, chapter 1. Me'idin onu be'ish peloini shechayv lachaveiru mosayim zuz v'nimtzu zoymimin. We testify against Mr. So-and-so, a certain man, that he owes his fellow 200 zuz. A nice quantity of money, probably enough to finance somebody for a year. V'nimtzu zoymimin, they turned out to be plotting to be treacherous witnesses because he never owed him that money at all. How are we going to punish them? Lekin, they receive the lashes, says Rabbi Meir. Lekin u'mishalamin, they have received the lashes, but they also have to pay. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir, as we shall presently see in the Mishnah. They have to suffer the lashes and they have to pay both. According to Rabbi Meir, they receive the lashes for giving false testimony, and they have to pay the 200 that they said the other guy owed his friend when he didn't. And Rabbi Meir explains, Shaloi Hashem Hamevi'oi Lidi Makos, not the name that brings him to the hands of lashes. Mevi'o Lidi Tashlumin brings him to the hand of repayments. The name here, Hashem, this is the name that is written in the Torah. All of the Torah is made up of God's names. All the verses and words of the Torah are all names of God. And there is a verse in the Ten Commandments in Exodus and Leviticus that says, do not bear false testimony. This is called a name. We would say it's not the commandment that the prohibition that brings this person to get lashes, the prohibition against false testimony, that's not the same as what the Torah says in Deuteronomy about the Eid Zomim, that he has to suffer what he intended to make the other person suffer. It's not the same thing that brings him Lidei Tashlumin to repayment, because that's a different mitzvah. There is a mitzvah, don't bear false testimony, and there's a mitzvah, what to do to the Eidim Zomimin, to the false witnesses. Divrei Rabbi Meir, these above are the words of Rabbi Meir, who holds that both penalties are applicable. They get lashes and they have to pay. The Chachamim Omrim, but the other sages say, and this is the accepted opinion, Kol Amashalim en Elokim, everybody who is paying compensation, Eino Elokim, does not suffer the lashes. That is the accepted halacha. So Rabbi Meir is more severe, putting two punishments on the false witness, and the other sages are more lenient. Once the person pays out the money, he gets saved from the very terrible penalty of lashes. Mishnah Gimel, the third Mishnah of Makot, chapter 1. Me'idin onu v'ish peleini shehu chayav malkus arboim. We testify against Mr. So-and-so, a certain individual, that he is liable to receive the penalty of Malkut, the lashes of Arboim, the 40 lashes, which are actually 39. They have testified that the person either flagrantly wore a mixture of linen and wool in their clothes, or they ate or they cooked meat and milk together. The person performed some act that makes him liable when he's duly warned to the 40 lashes. They're testifying against him. V'nimtzu u'zomimin, they are found out to be treacherous false witnesses. Lekin shmeinim, they are going to have a total of 80 lashes. In other words, twice over 39, 78 lashes. This is now the first opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Meir. They're going to get two sets of lashes. Mishum lo sanev reacho eid shokir. On account, first of all, of the commandment in the Ten Commandments, you shall not answer against your neighbor as a false witness. Exodus chapter 20. Likewise, a second set of lashes, you shall do to him what he plotted against his friend, the explicit words of Deuteronomy chapter 19. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. The other sages say, Einon leikin el arboim. This set of false witnesses will only suffer 40 lashes. It will only be afflicted with one set of lashes, not two. And that is the accepted opinion. Meshalashin b'mamoin. The Hebrew word meshalashin is from the root shlosha, meaning three. Here, the word means you divide up the money. Meshalashin b'mamoin. We will divide the monetary payments, which will have to be repaid by each of the false witnesses. Ve'ein meshalshin b'makos. We do not, however, divide up the lashes. Each one of them is going to get the full set of 39 lashes. Ketzad, the Mishnah explains. Heiduhu shehu chayv l'chaveroi mosayim zuz. If they gave testimony against him that he's liable to his friend 200 zuz. V'nimtzu zomimin, they were found out to be false witnesses. Mishalshin b'neihem, we're going to divide it up between them. If there were a set of two witnesses, they'd each have to pay 100 zuz. If there were three, each would have to pay 66 and a third zuz, and so on. But if they testified against him, that he's liable to the penalty of 40 lashes. They were found out to be false witnesses. Each and every one of the witnesses will get the full set of 40 lashes, that are really 39. Well, now, in the next Mishnah, we're going into the laws of testimony and how do you prove Edim Zomamin to be such. Let us understand here that one way that you can disprove the testimony of a witness is if the thing that he says is demonstrably proven to be false. But by demonstrably disproving the testimony of the Edim Zomamim, that is not going to nail them as Edim Zomamim. What nails them as Edim Zomamim, if we prove that they could not possibly have been witnesses to what they say they saw because they were somewhere else at the time. And this is what our Mishnah now goes on to discuss. Mishnah 4 of Makos chapter 1. Ein ho'edim nasim zimimin. The witnesses do not become in the category of edim zomamin to have all of the punishments visited upon them when that is proven. Ad she yozoimu es atzmon. Until they will incriminate themselves. That is to say, they will incriminate their bodies. Their bodies were not present where they said they were. It's not the testimony that that is found out to be a matter of perjury. It is they incriminate themselves by their physical presence, as the Mishnah now goes on to explain. Ketzad. Omru me'idin onu ve'ish peloini shehorag es ha'nefesh. If they were to say, we testify against a certain man that he killed a nefesh, he killed a soul, a person. When the judges ask them, when the judges are investigating this testimony and subjecting them to interrogation, they say to them, how is it that you are testifying? What is the basis of your testimony? Well, if they answer, well, look, that individual got killed. Or if they were to say, look, the killer, the alleged killer, was with us on that day in a certain place. Ein elu zomamin. These are not in the category of the treacherous witnesses. They may be false witnesses, but this is not what incriminates them as edim zomamin, upon whom we will visit the very penalty they were trying to visit on this man accused of murder. The above, where they say, look, the circumstances of the act were such and such, and we were there, that is not what incriminates them. But if the rabbinical court said to them, how is it that you are testifying? Look, you were with us on that very day in a certain place. In this case, the witnesses are proven to be false witnesses. What is happening here is that two witnesses have stepped forward in the court and said, look, that man committed a murder. If other witnesses came and said it could not be because the person, the alleged killer was with us that day, that does not rule these two as Edim Zomamin. In our case, when they say to them, when another set of witnesses gets up and says to these two witnesses, How come how could you possibly give this testimony? Shehari atem eisem imonu oiso hayom b'mokem ploni. You were with us that day someplace else, in some other place. How can you possibly testify that you witnessed Mr. X kill Y in Paris when you were with us in Berlin that day and there was no way you could travel from Berlin to Paris to witness that? Hare elu zomemen, it's in the latter case that the false witnesses are proven to be false. When two other witnesses come and say, look, your bodies were not present at the place where you say you were to witness this act because you were elsewhere. V'neherogin al pihem, and the two edim zomemen are, and all of the Edim Zomen, however many they were, two, three, or four, or as many as they were, they're all going to be executed according to the testimony of this new set of witness who steps up against them and says, look, you couldn't have seen it because you were with us that day at that time. You're in a different place. So this is the essence of the determination of who comes under the category of the Edim Zomem, and that is the plural of the expression Ed Zomem, which is the singular, a treacherous witnesses. So what we have just seen now is that there's the testimony of the two witnesses who claim to have seen somebody kill somebody else. And then there step forward before the court, another different two witnesses, to say to the first two witnesses, how could you possibly testify what you said in truth because you were elsewhere with us on that day at that time? So you've got two sets of witnesses. Well, who are you going to believe? According to the Torah in Deuteronomy 19, it is the second set of witnesses that you believe. If they testify that the first set were not where they said they were. So the Torah, intrinsically, if there was no second set of witnesses, nobody to controvert the first set of witnesses, we would rule the case according to them. And as a law of the Torah, that if a second set came forward to controvert their evidence, we're going to depend upon the evidence of the second set. And this leads us to our next Mishnah, which now carries that discussion further. This could go on and on in the court. Bo achirim vehezimum. If other witnesses came and they proved the second set of witnesses to be false witnesses, how could you say that that those witnesses were with you in Berlin when they were with us in Paris? We've got a new set of witnesses stepping forward. Bo'achirim hezimum, and then another set comes forward and controverts the evidence of the third set of witnesses. Afilu mea, even if it's 100, kulam yehoregu, they're all going to be subject to the death penalty. We have a very complex situation here in the court where the words of our Mishnah could be understood in a couple of ways. How could this lead to 100 executions of false witnesses? Let's say that a first set of witnesses accused the man of murder, and the second set of witnesses said you couldn't have seen him, you weren't there. So he's knocked out those first two. The second group of witnesses has knocked out the first group. Then a new set of witnesses comes forth and say, no, we did see him kill the man. And the same second set of witnesses, no, you were not there either, you were with us. A third group steps forward, we saw him kill the man. This second set of witnesses, no, you were with us. And they keep on knocking down all of these witnesses who are trying to nail the accused man. And you've got potentially 100 of people have been accused of false testimony by this one set of two witnesses, the second group of witnesses. So the opinion of the first Tana in our Mishnah is that indeed you might get up to 100 deaths in such a case. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Judah says that is not the case. Istotis hizoi. That is istotis. The precise meaning of the Hebrew word istotis is subject to the commentary of Rabbi Ovadia of Batinura here. That is to say, it is this second group of witnesses that keep on disqualifying all the other sets. They are really perverse. Because they have formed this plot between the two of them just to disqualify anybody who comes to testify in the case of this alleged murder. That's the first explanation of Batanura of the meaning of this Hebrew word istotis, which is quite an unusual word. And then another explanation is Batanura that this second set of witnesses who keep on disqualifying all the others as if they are putting blue ink on every single set of witnesses that steps forward to testify against the accused. They keep on disqualifying each of them. There is in Hebrew the name of a blue dye called isotis. Isotis might be translated into English as the very old word woad, which is a plant-derived ink, which probably has the same staining effect as contemporary tattoo inks have on, which are now all the rage all over the insane world. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying this is really excessive, what the first opinion of the Mishnah is saying, that you might let one set of witnesses disqualify many sets of other witnesses. Rabbi Yehuda says this is really excessive, but the actual halacha is that it could be that one set of witnesses would actually disqualify many other sets of witnesses. And with this, we conclude today's Mishnah study.